Nonlinear dynamics and self-organization, two subjects to which Ray Capral has contributed brilliantly over the years, setting high standards for our entire community, have long been associated with the ability of large classes of systems driven out of the state of equilibrium to generate complex behavior. As illustrated already by several presentations in this meeting, one of the principal signatures of this complexity is the onset of spatial or temporal patterns characterized by length and time scales in the macroscopic range. These patterns are sustained, essentially, by dynamical processes that are switched on within the system, such as reactions or diffusion, by the non-equilibrium constraints, and can therefore, on these grounds, be qualified as function or dynamics driven. On the other hand, in a number of situations of considerable interest, we encounter macroscopic or at least supramolecular systems, such as composite materials, membranes, or polymers, which would definitely qualify as complex, but which are entirely intra- or intermolecular interaction driven, exhibit microscopic length scales, and are embedded in an equilibrium environment. Furthermore, in some of these situations, it is obvious that it is the structure that dictates the function rather than the other way around, the DNA providing perhaps the most provocative and clear-cut example. My purpose in this presentation will be to deliver some comments and present some results on this apparent dichotomy of equilibrium versus non-equilibrium, structure versus function, and perhaps in the context of this workshop, one might say Whittington-like versus Capral-like mechanisms for complexity and self-organization. And as you might have guessed from the title of the talk, one key point is that the complementarity between these two generic kinds of mechanisms becomes especially apparent and leads to some unexpected results when the process of interest involves metastable phases. The particular class of systems in which we shall illustrate these ideas pertain to colloidal matter, and in particular to self-organization phenomena involving nano-sized materials of the kind of protein solutions, zeolites, dusts, space plasmas, aerosols, and so on. All these materials share the common feature that their constituting units interact via forces whose attractive part is both short-ranged and weak compared to simple atomic fluids. An immediate consequence of this being that the spontaneous self-assembly towards ordered phases, and from now on we shall focus on the crystallization of protein solutions to be specific, is compromised by the presence of high nucleation barriers, and as everybody knows, nucleation is the rate limiting step for crystallization or for whatever self-assembly towards an ordered phase. And this is, of course, one of the outcomes of modern informatics. And these nucleation barriers, under typical conditions, turn out to be as high as 100 times the thermal energies for protein solutions. On the other hand, it turns out that these very same materials, under certain conditions, give rise to metastable phases, and in the case of protein solution, this metastable phase would be a high concentration protein solution to be opposed to the initial low concentration protein solution that we have prepared in the crystallization box, as some people refer to this kind of particular chemical reactor. And these metastable phases turn out, and that will be, of course, there. We shall elaborate further on this along this presentation, turn out to have to interfere constructively with this self-assembly phenomenon. More specifically, the presence of such metastable phases switches on unexpected non-standard nucleation mechanisms in which we have combined and independently going on structure and density fluctuations. So if we place ourselves in this, space of density versus structure, here we have, let's say, the original low concentration protein solution, and there we would have the protein crystal if we are operating under appropriate conditions. The classical picture of nucleation that goes back to Gibbs is that in the crystallization problem, you move along the diagonal. You densify, and at the same time, you crystallize. But when you have intermediate metastable phases, there are new pathways that are opened. And in particular, one can foresee situations where you first densify, creating some sort of metastable high concentration protein solution, and it is in this setting that the system likes to crystallize rather than invent at the same time both density and structural fluctuations that would fit together to give a final crystal. So you circumvent the diagonal, first densify and then crystallize. Now, because of this potential coexistence of several pathways, kinetic effects become inevitably important. And there is experimental evidence about many manifestations of such kinetic effects, an interesting example of which is the appearance of critical nuclei whose shape is far from being spherical, even for globular proteins, simply because the system, because of these competing pathways, does not have the time and the leisure to minimize whatever thermodynamic potential it might be subjected to, and may live forever for long times, as long as days or years or the age of the universe, if you prefer, in such asymmetric structures, owing to this intrusion of kinetic, therefore of non-equilibrium effects, in an otherwise standard equilibrium-like problem. And because of this competition, one could foresee the possibility of enhancement of nucleation rate under certain conditions, thereby leading to dramatic lowering of these high barriers and to the crystallization, for instance, of protein solutions under good conditions, which is, by the way, a very important technological problem. Everybody knows the importance of having good protein crystals in pharmaceutical industry, among others. And it is not an accident that during the last 10 or perhaps more years, protein crystallization became one of the fashionable problems of space research. In order to provide good protein crystals, you go to space to avoid spurious earthbound effects. NASA was a pioneer on this, but this now has been taken over by ESA, the European Space Agency, since apparently NASA is more interested now in the exploration of the universe rather than in materials science. But certainly NASA played a pioneer role in this, in initiating this kind of research. So our objective in this presentation would then be to derive from first principles the free energy landscape of these materials, and then address the kinetic aspects of the process and determine conditions for optimization of the nucleation process. The first part of the talk, which draws on joint work with Jim Lutzko in the University of Brussels, will be devoted to the construction of the free energy from first principles of these materials using the formulas of equilibrium statistical mechanics. And then we will switch to joint work with Catherine Nicholas, who is here present, on the kinetic non-equilibrium aspect of this process. So, the first part of the talk on microscopic formulation of the free energy landscape, a very short introduction to the main tool that we have used, the classical density functional theory, whose starting point is that the free energy is a unique functional of the local density rho of a material. Now, in a fluid, of course, the density is equal to the mean density owing to transversal invariance. This is not the case of a solid. The density is peaked around the nodes of the lattice. It is traditional in this approach to approximate this local density by a Gaussian-like peak, and it is also traditional to switch eventually to Fourier space, and in this way one has a set of Fourier amplitudes which describe the deviation of the density of the solid from uniformity. And the associated Fourier coefficients can be looked at as order parameters describing the structure of the material, or the crystallinity, as we might say. And of course, we expect that the dominant role would be played by the first Fourier coefficient, whence from now on our second order parameter, in addition to the density, will be this first Fourier coefficient, to which we shall refer as crystallinity. Now, using this formalism and combining this property of free energy of a material to be a unique functional of the local density with thermodynamic perturbation theory, and knowing that practically all exact results in equilibrium statistical mechanics are limited to hard spheres, we write the free energy as the hard sphere part plus a correction due to the intermolecular interactions. And now we want to model the interparticle interactions to account for this short range and weak character specific to colloidal matter. And one very clever way to do it was suggested some 10 years ago by Ten Wold and Frenkel, who invented a potential that would go, depending on the parameter alpha, from the Lennard-Jones potential, characteristic of a classical fluid, this would happen for alpha equal to 1, to a potential sharing the properties of colloidal interactions, namely weak and short-range attractive part, as alpha is increased. And you can see this in this formula. If alpha is increased, the radius at which the potential, the distance at which the potential becomes minimum compared to the hard core diameter, tends to go to zero. And in this way, we can sort of make a crossover between extreme situations. Now, using this potential, we may construct the phase diagram using this microscopic formulation. And this phase diagram, as alpha is tuned from 1, let's say, to 50, gives rise to significant differences between ordinary fluids and colloidal matter. Specifically, for ordinary fluids, alpha equal to 1, we have the Lennard-Jones potential, and the traditional phase diagram where you have the dilute fluid, that would be the low concentration protein solution, a dense fluid, a highly concentrated protein solution, and the solid. As alpha is increased, the critical point of the dense or the fluid to fluid coexistence goes downwards, and eventually it is pushed below the triple point. And for alpha equal to 50, which is pretty representative of colloidal matter, you get a direct coexistence between low concentration protein solution and solid. And this is the part that you would, the only part that you would see if you were not aware of other possibilities. And all, practically all crystallization experiments carried out so far have been going in this region, where you go from fluid to solid. But there is a remnant of the coexistence region between the two fluids through this critical point. And if therefore you are operational, you operate in this region, you will see a remnant of this dense fluid, and you may or may not take advantage of its existence, as we will see further below. This is a magnified part of the phase diagram for alpha equal 50, and the different points here show agreement with experiment and with molecular dynamics simulation. Now, we go to the most interesting part of this first half of the talk. We move in the phase diagram in order to crystallize. And we shall do this in two different ways. We shall first follow the traditional path, where you densify and crystallize at the same time, where you don't see the dense liquid, but you go directly from the dilute solution to the solid. We can call it the equilibrium pathway, or take a different pathway in which you are slightly above, or you cut across the dense fluid region. So this is one way to parameterize the classical and the non-classical path. Never mind about the details. So, I mean, just in one word, in the classical path, you move the density and the crystallinity simultaneously, linearly with x, and this is the diagonal along the two-dimensional phase diagram that we saw earlier. And in the non-classical part, you first densify and then crystallize, as this Heaviside theta function indicates. Now, the most significant difference differences are summarized in this graph. This is the classical path. This is the dilute protein solution. This is the protein crystal. This is the barrier. But when you take the non-classical path, the free energy versus the order parameter has this structure exhibiting a local minimum other than the one corresponding to the dilute solution and to the solid. This, by definition, then, is a metastable phase. Why metastable? Because it has a higher free energy than the dilute solution. So you don't form spontaneously droplets of a dense liquid that would require a lower free energy than this one. What do you form? Well, you form clusters. And these clusters have been observed experimentally by Peter Vekilov from the University of Houston, who has carried out remarkable experiments on this type of systems in the last 8 years or so. And these clusters, statistically, live during the lifetime of the experiment. A given cluster, of course, decomposes and other clusters are formed, but statistically, they are there. And their lifetime, the fact that they have a statistically well-defined lifetime corresponds to the fact that to decompose them completely, you need to overcome barriers. But these barriers, although these barriers are pretty high, to have them sustained for a certain time. But mind you, that these barriers are still and considerably smaller than the barriers of the classical path. We may therefore assert that in principle we have there the ingredients for accelerating nucleation as compared to the classical pathway. This is a three-dimensional free energy landscape on which I shall not elaborate further. It's just to show to you that one can do it. And now we will move to the second part of the talk, where drawing on the existence of these these metastable or of these local free energy minima, we are going to figure out how the kinetics works to lead you from the initial low protein, low concentration protein solution to the protein crystal. Generally speaking, we will work with two order parameters, density and crystallinity. These order parameters will evolve in time during the crystallization process, during the kinetics of the crystallization process. Why would they evolve in time? For two reasons. First, because they will be subjected to thermodynamic forces. Why on earth would they be subjected to thermodynamic forces in an equilibrium problem? Because if you stay in equilibrium, you will never crystallize. To crystallize, you need a supersaturation, a supercooling, or whatever. And this, according to thermodynamics, and provided that so-called local equilibrium assumption holds, whereby the non-equilibrium state functions have the same structure as in equilibrium, only now they are space and time dependent, these thermodynamic forces will be given by the gradients of the free energy. But now, since we have several order parameters, we have a gradient vector, and these order parameters, whose derivatives define the fluxes, these being the forces, will be linked by phenomenological relationships. In principle, these relationships are nonlinear, but we shall place ourselves in the linear range of irreversible processes corresponding to mild supersaturation, which may not always be the case, but people do not like high supersaturations, even though this would accelerate crystallization, because the quality of the crystals so produced is poor. So we are here in the linear range of irreversible processes, and we have here a matrix of phenomenological coefficients, which is nothing but the Onsager matrix. And of course, we have to complement these dynamics by random forces, which account for the thermodynamic fluctuations, and which, of course, are the prime movers in the nucleation process, because owing to the presence of the barriers, you have to be pulled across a barrier by a thermodynamic fluctuation. Now, this is a dynamical system, a stochastic dynamical system, which is out of equilibrium because of this, and highly nonlinear because of the fact that the F contains several minima, including the one associated to the metastable state. So here we have a typical Capra-like problem in an initially seemingly equilibrium-like situation. And we are now going to see what one can say on this problem. First of all, we shall map this into a Fokker-Planck equation description corresponding to a diffusion in the two-dimensional order parameter space. Now this this involves a coupling both between the drift and the diffusion part, and this is related to the short discussion we had after Giovanni Cicotti's talk. You may have noticed the analogy between this formulation and his formulation. This is related to the fact that this has an almost variational structure, but not quite such a structure, because of the presence of this matrix. So you need to have some integrability conditions, but this can be taken care of by an appropriate linear transformation. And if you are willing to work in this redefined phase space of the new order parameters, which is only a mild kind of change, then you have an integrable problem, and you have, which is driven by a potential U, which you may prefer to call a kinetic potential versus the thermodynamic F potential, because its structure contains information both from F and from L. So now we will move. We have a diffusion in this potential. Now, rather than work with a potential that inherits the complex structure of the free energy, we shall try to be generic and figure out a generic potential that does for you the kind of transitions observed in real-world free energy landscapes. And what you want, therefore, is that, depending on the circumstances, you switch from a two-well potential, that would be the classical path, the two wells being the low density, the low concentration protein solution and the crystal, to a three-well potential, where this is the intermediate metastable phase. Now, one of the great Fields medalists has taught us, René Thom has taught us, that this is a generic evolution scenario corresponding in a potential system, and we do deal after our transformation with a potential system, and corresponds to the so-called parabolic umbilic catastrophe scenario, and this can be fully unfolded by four control parameters. But if we give up being very ambitious and introduce some symmetry considerations, we will limit ourselves to three control parameters, and this typical parabolic umbilic type catastrophe potential has then a bifurcation set that satisfies, that complies rather with our requirements. Namely, there is a region in parameter space, well, actually I should have drawn a three-dimensional graph, but if we project for given mu's to this axis, we switch from a two-stable phase region to a three-phase stable phase region, and this involves transcritical and limit point bifurcations. And now we will analyze the transition dynamics generated by such a potential. We shall first consider work leftward here. This is the lambda negative region, and then rightward, the lambda positive region. Now, what happens in the lambda negative region is that essentially your two-dimensional order parameter space collapses to one-dimensional one. What you have, as far as dynamical systems are concerned, is that you have two stable fixed points separated by an unstable fixed point. This is the unstable separatrix of the fixed point, of the unstable fixed point of the saddle. This is the stable separatrix. And this is the domain of attraction of the fluid, let's call it fluid one, the low concentration protein solution, and this is the solid. This is the lambda negative region. Now, when you go to lambda positive, you get an intermediate metastable phase. So, and you also have, which as far as dynamical systems is concerned, is stable. Not only Lyapunov stable, but also asymptotically stable. It is not forever stable if you add fluctuations, but dynamical systems wise, it is stable. And then I have the other stable state, so let's call it fluid 1, fluid 2. This is a solid, and this is, we therefore need topological reasons to invoke the existence of an additional saddle point. So these are the unstable separatrix of this saddle point, stable separatrix, and this is a phase portrait, the configuration we work with. This is the domain of attraction of the solid, this is the domain of attraction of fluid, of the metastable fluid, this is the domain of attraction of the stable fluid, low concentration solution, and of course the extent of these domains of attraction will depend on the parameters, and the parameters, playing with the parameters, amount to playing with temperature and mean density, operationally. Now, the next step would be to add fluctuations and to consider the same limit as Giovanni mentioned in his presentation, namely low noise, low intensity random thermal noise. By the way, I should have added that all this integrates the fluctuation dissipation type of theorem, linking the diffusion matrix of the noise to the matrix of the Onsager coefficients. So if we have weak noise compared to the extent of the barriers, we can map the diffusion process in the two-dimensional phase space into a Markov process, discrete Markov process, in which each stable state corresponds to the to one state of a Markov chain, of a Markov process. Now, so in this region, what we have then is that fluid 1 decomposes, state 1 decomposes to go to the more stable solid phase. We neglect for within the time scale of interest the reverse process. We could have added it, no problem. But in this region, we have a depletion, but also a reinforcement of the first state because of the metastable state, and then the metastable state in addition decomposes to give the solid. There is no topologically possible configuration allowing a direct connection between this and this. You need to work to a higher dimensional space to have such a connection. Now, what about the case? Well, if you work out the mapping of the diffusion process into the Markov process, you will discover, not surprisingly, that the case are related to, of course, these famous exponentials of the potential barrier. More specifically, they are not, each of these case, yes, each of these case is given by a Kramers-like expression, as in traditional chemical kinetics, and Giovanni already showed examples of this. We do have, of course, the pre-exponential factor. Sigma u and sigma plus and minus are the stable and unstable eigenvalues of the transition matrix that we have displayed here. So it's simply, in the first case of negative lambda, it is just given by K1. Now, what about, and in the other case, we have several cases. Now, what is going to drive the nucleation? None of the individual case, but rather the slowest eigenvalue of the transition matrix. In the lambda negative region, since there is only one dimensional dynamics, this eigenvalue is just k1, but in the lambda positive case, we have a non-trivial combination of the individual case, which gives this lowest eigenvalue. And if we now plot this, the inverse of the absolute value of the lowest eigenvalue, which is the transition time, versus the bifurcation parameter, we discover that there is indeed, in the region of positive lambdas, which is precisely the region of metastable states, an optimum related to a minimum to a minimum of this first passage time quantity. If we now look more globally at the bifurcation diagram and we cross the region from the initial classical path, let's say, to the one of the non-classical path, lambda negative from lambda positive, we also see a remnant of indication of potential optimization through this systematic decrease of the transition time and the change of slope across the bifurcation point. Well, it is not difficult to let you read the conclusions. Rather than going through them with you, I would like to finish with a more general comment on the interference between equilibrium and non-equilibrium process in complex systems. I believe that this interference goes as far as any kind of process that would qualify as an evolutionary process. If you want to evolve, you must create an object with a priori low probability. Otherwise, evolution would not make sense. For instance, a cluster having good properties, like crystallinity, a good structure, in the context of nucleation, out of the enormous variety of possible clusters, whose number would be exponential, if not of the Avogadro number, but of a huge number. So there is a problem of selection. How to cope with the problem of selection? You need to enhance the probability of a priori improbable events. And the only mechanism that I can foresee, I can imagine, that we have at our disposal is the application of a temporary non-equilibrium constraint that will give a push to the favorable fluctuation compared to all other possible fluctuations. But once this push is given and the object has been constructed, it can happily live thereafter in equilibrium with its environment. And I was always fascinated by Schrödinger's aphorism that the DNA is an aperiodic crystal, because I think it captures this philosophy in a wonderful way. The DNA is a crystal under today's conditions, albeit an aperiodic one, in the sense that it lives in equilibrium with its environment. But it is certainly not an object that came about spontaneously. It is the result of a long evolution. And during this evolution, there certainly have been highly improbable dynamical processes that were highly improbable configurations that were adopted, which were made possible by appropriate nonlinear dynamical non-equilibrium processes, as Manfred Eigen's wonderful theory of molecular evolution has shown us a few decades ago. And it is on this note that I would like to finish this presentation. Thank you for your attention.